This is the Body Image Workshop, and we have Joan and Mary here to speak on that, and I'll turn it over to them.
Hi, everyone. My name's Mary. I'm a compulsive overeater. In all your handouts, those who haven't received handouts, I apologize. I should have known this would have been a big one of interest, this topic. What I'm going to get you to do is, after the session, if you can come up and write down your email number and print really clearly so I can actually see it, and I'll email it to you. Lorraine has gone to see if we can get more copies, but if that doesn't work out, I promise I'll email it to you. Okay. Body image is in our heads. It is made up belief about ourselves. The third step prayer is about turning over life to the care of our higher power and letting go of the bondage of self. You know, while I do this every day, I also take it back several times during the day. Anyone else? Does that sound familiar? Yeah. I just remember that when I take it back, I turn it over again. I get up in the morning, I get dressed, teeth, deodorant, makeup, jewelry, and I think, okay, you know, I don't look too bad. It's a good hair day. And then I walk by a store window and I think, who the hell is that? Yeah. The fear factor, you know, when fear is the motivator. As I worked through the steps my very first time, I knew that fear was my motivator for the weight that I held on to. I'm the youngest of three. I came to my parents late in their life. I had a very happy childhood. My parents went through the Depression. My mother was a caterer. I'll repeat that again. My mother was a caterer. Yeah. For our family, food was love. It was safety. It was proof my parents had survived and succeeded. All the family activities revolved around food. When I was 17, I was raped, beaten, and it was because I was thin. And to my mind said, you're not safe being thin. So I piled on weight to the point of 300 pounds because that was armor. I held on to that for 30 years until OA. I sought that eating because I never wanted that to ever happen again, and I never told anybody about that experience. I'll say again, my mother was a caterer, a very good caterer. I learned early about comfort food, mac and cheese. Not only did a bowl of homemade soup and several pieces of homemade bread taste really good and chase away a bit of the cold that we experience here in Calgary, it was helping me stay safe. And then my addict just took over the rest of the job. There are many stories in the big book about fear. You know, I've heard lots of people share, and fear seems to come up a lot. The promises mention fear of people and of economic insecurity. I can also identify the fear of not being loved, of not being accepted, of not getting promotions at work, of not being liked, of not making it to the next day, and the fear of simply being hurt. When we dig deeper, in the OA 12 and 12, on page 50, we read, sometimes the process of doing steps 4 and 5 brings to our awareness more than our character defects. Sometimes we uncover old traumas, experiences of being abandoned, abused, sexually molested, or raped are far more common among us than anybody would like us to believe. I realized in a way that I was not unique. I would really like to think that, but of course I'm not. There are others who have experienced similar occurrences. I've shared my story several times, and I'd look around the room as I was sharing my story, and I could see tears welling up in people's faces, and I thought, yeah, we are speaking the same language. I knew I had to work through my fear because it was impacting my daily life. I was a screamer and a door slammer. I was so angry about my experiences, and I had no idea how to express that. My daughter will tell you how she survived those dark days of my disease. I had to find something that helped me out. So this is my version of brass knuckles. It's on my left hand because I don't really mean it and I can't do much with my left hand, but it's a talisman. You know, I think we have to do whatever it takes, and this is what I did. New body, old image. So when you don't recognize yourself in your new body, on page 81 of the OA Brown Book, that's the second book, sometimes I take my body size for granted, but at times I look at myself in the mirror with a sense of awe and humility that something as close to me as 150-pound weight loss was not my doing, but the work of a power greater than myself. Okay, this is out of the book, that's not me. Yeah. I found OA, yesterday was my 14th anniversary in the program. I was not one of those who became abstinent immediately. It took me a couple of years. I actually thought OA was just sort of like a volunteer program, and I remember telling someone, I just do OAs on Sundays. Yeah. It took me 2 years to find a food plan that actually worked for me. And then it took a while to sort of find an exercise plan because I needed to exercise because I sit at a computer all day or I'm in my car all day. And I had a dog who was 14 years old and really didn't need walking anymore. And unfortunately, she passed on the Rainbow Bridge. And I got a young dog who needed exercise all the time. And thank you, God, that got me back in my exercising. You know, I was quite cocky about my food plan. I figured, you know, this is perfect. I can eat like this for the rest of my life and it'll be good. And I was successful. I dropped a lot of weight, but I got bored. One of the things that happened, I went through a breakup and didn't eat through it. But I moved into a neighborhood where there were lots of kids that came for Halloween. And I thought, oh yeah, I'm good. I can hand out Halloween candy. I'll be fine. Yeah, I can eat it frozen, actually. Yeah. Us and them. So remember that your recovery doesn't depend on them. In order to look after myself, I had to think about what my trigger foods were. And I'm an ice cream leveler. You know, when you take a scoop out, it's not level anymore. You have to, like, eat it so that it's level. Yeah, I also figured out I'd cooked Christmas dinner for my family 25 years in a row with no, they never got skin. Yeah, there was never any skin on the turkey that they got. Yeah. So I treated my addictions and my trigger foods like an allergy. And I cleared my house of all those foods, and I don't have them back in my house anymore. Because I do the same if I had a child with a peanut allergy. So I can do the same thing for me. And it doesn't matter about anyone else in the house. Fortunately, I live alone, but it doesn't matter about having stuff in the house for guests because I'm important and I can't risk those things. My grandson will say to me, Grammy, why don't you just buy a bucket of ice cream and it'll be there when I come the next time. It's like, no, it won't. Yeah. I can walk through the store now and my higher power says to me, you don't eat that anymore. And I can walk by those things. And that didn't happen overnight. I'm 14 years in program and it took some time for that habit to develop, but it's like any other habit. I have a lot of food pushers in my family. Anyone else have food pushers in their family? Yeah. That's a hard thing too, to constantly say to them, I don't eat that. And they'll say, oh, it's just a little bit, you need to try it. It's repetition. And I used to have huge resentments at those people about those kind of things, but they're looking for love too. I was there as well. They're looking for acceptance by me taking their food. So I understand what it is, but I don't take it. I have notes because I'm a speed speaker, and my mother used to say I was vaccinated with a stereo needle, and I can go off. You know, I learned to ask what was going to be served wherever I was going for dinner. And now my family understands if I take something else with me. I learned to take or to go on the internet and review menus online. We can do that now today, and that helps as well. I grew up in the late 60s, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And when I went through high school, I was probably maybe 15, 20 pounds overweight. Because, you know, this was Twiggy and this was hipsters, and I just couldn't do that. But when I thinned out, you know, my late teens, I was promiscuous. And I know now that I was just looking for that attention. And I had another period of thinness where I ate, you know, like a square of cheese and ate Tums. I've been on weird diets. I've joined three gyms and paid the membership and never gone. For 3 years, each for 9 years, I've paid and never gone. And the last one, I signed up, and the guy said to me, "Are you sure you really want to sign up?" I was like, I was insulted. Of course, I'm going to come. Never went. Yeah, so I'm supporting your gym. Yeah, I don't do that anymore. Thank goodness. There are several relations in my life that have gone sideways. My job, with the help of my sponsor and my higher power, was to identify those, to write about my part, and to make amends where it was appropriate, meaning where I would not harm the person further, and then to live my amends. I was in a relationship for 18 years and figured it would just go on forever, and became very complacent, and most of those 18 years I was not in program. So I was self-sabotaging myself and the relationship throughout it. And he was having an affair the last 4 years of our relationship, and I never even noticed. So 6 months after the breakup, I was able to work in those 6 months because I was in program and I had a great sponsor, that I was able to forgive myself and forgive him. And, you know, both of us, so we're not back together, but we're definitely in a good place, and that's only because of program. Okay. So, 14 years in program. Am I at my goal weight? Hell no. Am I still 300 pounds? No. I'm still working my program, and I'm living my life with goals for a healthy life. I've just been diagnosed with diabetes. I have thyroid cancer. I'm also able to let those things go and trust that my higher power has got my back. And I'm doing the right things. I've got medical professionals looking after me, and yeah, I'm good. I also had to let go of my fear. So I can actually get in an elevator with a man now, and I couldn't before. In my job, I meet a lot of men one-on-one, and I can do that, and there's no fear, and it's all of this program, and working through my issues, and accepting my body where I am today, and knowing that I don't think my higher power and I are done. I'm a lifer in this program. Every single day, I learn something different about myself. I have great awareness of the people around me. I don't have to be an expert. I was mentioning to someone this morning that my perfect is only in my head. You don't actually know what my perfect is supposed to be. Whatever I manage to accomplish, it's good enough. I don't worry about what people think about me anymore. I work hard to mind my own business. So, yeah, thank you for attending this workshop and listening to me speak, and now you hear from Joan.
And I'm going to take off my shoes. Good morning, everyone. My name is Joan, and I'm a grateful recovering compulsive overeater from Portland, Oregon, or Wilsonville. I came to my first meeting in 1976, got turned off by the God stuff, even though I had a parochial school upbringing. A meeting in 77, and finally, March 15th of 78, I came to stay by the grace of God. Beware of the Ides of March. It will get you. I have a picture book that I'm going to send around, kind of me through the years, recovery and not. I am the second of five children to Ed and Dorothy Nicholas. Well, actually, after hearing our keynote last night, I've been thinking a lot about loss. And I am actually the third child of seven. I was born a twin, and when she was 3 months old, she died of it, like a SIDS. And then my mother was pregnant with another boy who lasted 10 hours. And my brother, who's 3 years younger than me, was next. And I can't imagine what my mother was feeling when she went to deliver that baby. So, I've always known I was a twin, but I come from the generation where feelings aren't really talked about. People just grin and bear it and hunker down and say, it's okay. I find myself doing this and I have to laugh because my mother, you could tell she, either when she was older and had arthritis and other things, she'd say, we go, how are you, Mom? I'm fine. Yeah. And so there wasn't a lot of expression, but you could, I'm sure the sorrow and the grief was palpable in that house. My younger sister told me that the only time Mom said she ever thought about divorcing my father was when he couldn't understand how she was grieving when she'd lost two babies right in a row. Well, my father had just been 2.5 years in the Pacific and had watched his buddies go right and left. And so you just deal with what you have to deal. And also my mother, by the time she was 8, she had lost a brother and her father. So a lot of loss. And I don't know, I've always known I was loved. But for some reason, in that little girl's mind, it was, well, if they really had to lose one child, would they have rather it been me? Which is pretty heavy for a little girl. My first recollections of being overweight was about 5. I felt different from the neighbor kids, and I couldn't keep up. I was fortunate that in grade school I went to a parochial school, and so we had uniforms, so I didn't have to go through all the problem of not being able to wear what everybody's wearing. And one of the things in my young teenage years life that I wanted, it just really bugged me, but I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't wear the Bobby Brooks and all the things in 17 magazine. But I could be a Breck girl, you know, so that's what I thought. Well, at least you've got nice hair, you know. It's crazy. So growing up was hard, the teasing, and it became especially hard when I went to a public high school. And I didn't know how to relate to boys. I mean, I just didn't. So the summer after my sophomore year in high school, my folks really put out a lot of money and sent me to a camp for overweight girls. And I lost 40 pounds so I could get a pep outfit. Not rally, which would have been the ultimate. The ultimate would have been on rally, but, you know, I wasn't going to humiliate myself like that. And I can remember in the late fall, like after Thanksgiving, right before Christmas, I could see the horror on my mother's face when she saw that I hadn't really changed my eating plans and I was eating myself out of that uniform. And but like all of us, you know, I have a disease. I think the saving grace of my life was I always knew I was loved. I knew I had that. And that probably was my saving grace. And the thing that I, you know, after 40 years in program, it's the looking back at the memories that once were so painful, now still, you know, can be painful, but you've got some perspective about what was going on in your life, what was going on in the other person's life, what, you know. And so for that reason, it's easier to let go of resentments than to work my program. College was the, when I hit my top weight, I must have been 305 pounds if I was an ounce. I can remember that's about the time that pantyhose came out. And I would have to buy two pair, cut one leg off of one side and one off the other, and put these pantyhose on, hoping that when I bent over just the least little bit, you couldn't see the nylon cutting into my flesh. And it's embarrassing in the dorm rooms. Like, what are you doing? Well, I didn't date until I was 27, so I feel somewhat stunted in that way. It's not that I didn't want to. I just didn't know how to do life. It was so much easier to turn to food. I went on my first diet when I was 11, and there would be the monthly weigh-ins with the doctor, and I'd cry, and I don't know why. It's, you know, I haven't lost weight, and it was miserable. Finally, in college, I realized that I did a thing called medical diet service, and it was kind of a precursor to the commercial programs that we have now where you go get your food and that's all you eat and whatever. But I would drive from Monmouth, which is an hour and a half from Portland, every week to get my food. And I was willing at that point. At that time, I couldn't stay in a pair of pants more than 2 weeks. It was just, I only knew how to eat. After college, I went a fifth year. And actually, I went simply because there was a guy down there I was interested in. And anyway, I went into Weight Watchers, and I lost about 80 pounds. And I went and saw this person, and he couldn't believe what he saw. He made a pass at me, and I freaked. And that was that. So when I came into the program, I didn't get it right away. But when I did, I got my weight off without a sponsor. But then, as everybody says, all the feelings start coming up. And I knew, honey, if you want to keep this off, you better get some help because you can't do it alone. And so I worked with that sponsor probably 5 or 6 years. And I had, I maintained my weight for 30 years. And then a series of painful events happened, and I guess in a sense I gave up or couldn't, or didn't believe that God was bigger than me. I had to be God to control this. And within a 4-month period, we lost our family business of 5 and a half generations and 99 and a half years old. My mother passed. I was diagnosed with narcolepsy about 10 years prior. But in 2003, I got cellulitis, and my legs just ballooned up. And I had to go wear compression hose 24/7. And I thought, well, that's not the image I have of hips looking cool. You know, my first thought was, in the 80s, watching Laugh-In and seeing Ruth Buzzy sitting on the bench with Artie Johnson and hitting him with her purse, and she's got the compression hose that are going down her legs or the thick nylons that are going down. And I thought, oh, great, this is lovely. And I kind of gave up at that point. And it was hard, but I lost my father in 2013, and I'm on my current abstinence for about three and a little bit more. I finally realized when I looked at, I happened to get my pictures out. God forbid I should look at getting the camera, as I had put on probably 50 pounds, and I was only looking from the neck up, and I said, okay, God took you there once, he can take you there again. And so, by the grace of God, I started swimming just about every day, started working my program as I know I need to work it, and I'm down about 50 pounds. I still have some more that I want to lose, and that's in God's hands. It's not in mine. And besides, the main point of this is, you know, body image. What am I projecting in an image? Or what do I think is healed in an image? Or what do I think is cool in an image? You know, I was always taken, always felt bad because I couldn't fit in with the fads because I was overweight. But what's important is what's inside. It doesn't make a darn bit of difference to God if I wear compression hose or if I have to wear a girdle. Thank God they don't have them anymore, or I won't buy them anymore. But the thing is, I've learned to love myself inside and out, and it was in looking at my pictures that I thought, God did that once for you. He can do it again. So I'm very grateful for God's love and that I am enough, and he's much bigger. Thanks.
The floor is now open for sharing. Please limit your sharing to the topic of this workshop. Each person will have up to 3 minutes to share. You may share from your seat or come to this microphone. Please speak as loudly as possible. Thank you.
My name is Beverly. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'm grateful to be abstinent and with you all today. Body image is a topic near and dear to my heart, and thank you both for your shares. I look at body image, the way I work it through my program is to work it through the steps. I owe myself a huge amends for the way I have treated myself and my body for most of my life. And I look at it, I have two daughters and a precious 3.5-year-old granddaughter. And my guideline for what I say to me about my body is, would it be okay to say it to them? And they are so precious to me. I would never hurt them with my thoughts and my words and my contempt that I used to hold and direct toward my own body. And you know, somehow, somewhere along the line, I got the false belief that, I think, that I could shame myself into looking better, getting thinner, you know, all that. I somehow thought shame was going to work, or at least that's how I acted, like was what was going to happen. And it never worked. What it did was it sent me to the refrigerator. And, you know, so insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. How am I supposed to feel good about my body if I abuse it with food, for one thing? The most direct path to a positive self-body image for me is abstinence. It's magic. I remember once at probably close to 250 pounds, and I had not been abstinent, and I got abstinent I think I'd been abstinent for a couple days, and I was going somewhere, and I got dressed, and I put my shirt on, and I looked in the mirror, and I thought, you look good. 2 days earlier, when I was not abstinent, I didn't think I looked good at all. Now, had I lost a bunch of weight in 2 days? No, maybe ounces. But it was coming from my head. So I think it's essential. Step seven, I had a sponsor who made me start doing affirmations. And step seven has it in there. I thought she was asking me to do something weird in New Age, and then I saw the word affirm in step seven. Oh, wait, 12 and 12. Read the whole thing and see if you can find it. It's beautiful. And so I have to affirm my body. And I do this thing. I have to own my vulnerabilities. My belly is my most vulnerable part of my body. If I had to be naked up here, please let me at least cover up my belly. So before I weigh, I do stand in front of the mirror naked and put my hands on my belly, and I say something nice and affirming. And then I send up a prayer. God, please let me have the number on the scale that I'm about to see be information only. So thank you for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Sue. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, gratefully abstaining today.
Hi, Sue.
Hi. Body image has been an issue with me my whole life. I was a fat kid and really didn't have any interaction with boys. I was always the best friend of the girl that had the boy. And so when I lost weight when I was 15, I had this immediate... people were paying attention to me, guys were paying attention to me, and I didn't really know how to handle that. And so in my late teens and my 20s, I kind of lived, made choices that I wasn't real proud of when it came to my sexuality and relationship with boys and men. And that just further skewed my body image. And I would gain weight because I would be afraid. I always thought, well, gee, at 330 pounds, I don't look too bad in the rear view mirror. It's the perfect height that's up higher, and it's, you know. And so I had a skewed body image at 330. Now, as I'm 110 pounds less and moving toward a healthy body weight, I see myself heavier than I was. So, see, I still have body image issues. And many times in the times that I've lost weight and gained weight, 100 pounds or more, I'd be getting healthy and happy and feeling good, and then I'd have a guy come up to me, or not necessarily inappropriately, but just come on to me in some way, and I would be afraid, and I would start eating again and gain the weight back. And what I realized this time as I went through the steps with a sponsor through the big book, when I really started looking at it, I wasn't afraid of the guys. I haven't been sexually abused. I'm not afraid. I don't have a past event that is clouding and filtering that. I was afraid of me. I was afraid of what I would do. I was afraid of reckless choices I might make again. And my sponsor reminded me that I'm not the girl I was in my 20s, that I can be a woman of substance. And the way I can be a woman of substance and a woman that I can feel good to be is through the prayers that it talks about in the big book. The big book talks about sexuality and the proper sexual ideal, and that ties with me with body image. And I really like this handout. This is wonderful. I really like it. It says, we ask God to mold our ideas. We ask God what we should do. We earnestly pray for the right ideal. And that's how I do it today, and I'm not afraid anymore. Thanks.
Good morning. I'm Trish, grateful recovering compulsive eater. Please raise your hand if you can't hear me, but I don't want to hold the microphone. I like using my hand. Body image for me is very a little bit different. I grew up very much as a tomboy. I could run faster, fight harder, jump higher than all the boys until the end of sixth grade. And then puberty hit. I developed very early, primarily large breasts, which were very interesting to boys and very unwelcome to me. Didn't want them. I remember going to a store with a special bra department when I was in seventh grade, maybe sixth grade, and the lady said, hold your arms up, and she put a pencil under my boobs to see if I needed a underwire bra, and I did. It stayed with my arms up. Oh my God, I do not want to wear an underwire bra for the rest of my life. I'm in seventh grade. But that's what I've worn for the rest of my life. I had no respect for my body as a woman until I gave birth. That was quite all. I was like, whoa, guys can't do that. It didn't cross my mind until it happened, and it was like, I suddenly really appreciated my body as a woman. I actually didn't start OA until 3 months later, and that baby is now 22 years old. One of the pieces of body image for me right now is I do a lot of backpacking, very long distance, heavy packs, 8 nights out, you carry everything, backpacking. And in the last couple of weeks since we got back from the most recent one, I go up the stairs and it's like, oh, whew, that was easy. I didn't used to feel that way. I mean, usually walking up the stairs is just walking up the stairs. And then sometimes walking up the stairs is, oh my God, I either got fat or I'm really tired. And then there's walking up the stairs now. And it's very motivating to continue to pursue some forms of exercise, which I pretty much detest, like most of us. I've never joined a gym and not gone. But I've joined a gym and, like, tortured myself I'm pretty good at that. I did have an experience that was, it seems, body image related. Actually, two of them. One was after I started losing weight, I had lost about 40 pounds. I've lost about 90 now. I walked into Costco, and people were looking at me. I was like, uh-oh, I have ink on my face. So I went to the bathroom, and I didn't have ink on my face. And I went back out, and I finished shopping, and people were still looking at me. It was about a week later when I realized, you're not invisible anymore. Oh, shit. I'm not prepared not to be invisible. But hold my own little hand, walk through the process, talk to the sponsor, talk to other people who have lost weight. They survived. I can do this too. It's what I need to do for me, even though it's really, 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 really scary. I liked being invisible. It was safe. Another experience was I was at, oh, time's up. You'll have to see me afterwards. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Pat, recovering compulsive eater from Seattle area. And I came to this program, I don't know, 30 some odd years ago, lost all the weight I needed to, my doctor saying, wow, you look like a normal person. I was like that for about 5-6 years, and I guess I got cured or something. And I left the program. Came back all the weight, plus another 20, came back in and out, okay? During that first 5 years when I was quote unquote cured, I had the experience, and I was at what my doctor thought was a great weight. I walked in front of the mirror, maybe I was getting dressed or something, and I just felt pretty good. And then I got a phone call or something. I don't remember what it was. And I was bummed. Whatever it was just bummed me out. And I walked back in past the mirror, and it's like, you're a fat, lazy slob. And it's like, how many days abstinent? We're talking about probably 15, 20 minutes. So I'm hearing a lot, and I have over the years, about letting higher power decide how good am I. Fast forward a number of years, I have, and I never cry about this, so I don't know why I am now. Well, I do, it's different. My daughter calls me up and says to me, when did you last have a mammogram? Well, I don't know. I don't believe in them. If I have breast cancer, I'm not going to be treated. She's, Mommy, with all our family history, my doctor is ignoring me because you don't have it. Oh, so I got a mammogram. I had breast cancer. Shit, okay. You got to have a mastectomy. La hell I do. I'm not having it. Had you had three different doctors to find one that would do a simple lumpectomy. And she sends me to an oncologist. She says, I'm not trying to force you into chemotherapy. He's a genetic oncologist. This is brand new. I was in his initial trials. Not trials for treatment, but yes, I'm BRCA2 positive. So that means I didn't have any other treatment but surgery. Every 6 months, either a mammogram, or MRI. I got by for 9 years. And the first experience was, ain't no way you're taking my boob. It's part of me. 9 years later, I have a recurrence. And they said, it's very early. Well, yeah, if you're after it every 6 months, it's got to be very early. And the surgeon says, we can easily just do really even a simple lumpectomy. I just looked at her. forget that shit. I'm done with it. I'm done with all of it. Take them both. They tell me Medicare will pay for new boobs. Fine. I get the new boobs, and they tell me, okay, you've all fitted for them. They're brand new in the box. Now you can't wear them for 4 or 6 weeks, however long, until your incision's all healed. By the time the incision was healed, it was like, screw that. About 4 or 5 years ago, I donated a couple of brand new boobs and to a worthy cause. And I have never worn them since. And I know people, or I assume people look at them, oh, well, she has them, she doesn't. They're not pulling my neck, my shoulders, or anything else. And I am so happy not to have them. So my self-image is a...
Hi, my name's Alana. I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. And when my time's up, can you show it right in my face? I can talk a lot. So yeah, this is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. Growing up, the message that I got was my sister was thin and I was fat, and I always observed this special relationship between my mom and my sister, and I thought that it was because my sister was thin and I was fat. And so it was set up from very early age that being thin equals being good equals being loved. And later in life, I guess it was a couple years ago, my mom, she's also in a 12-step program, and she made amends to me. And there was a question, there was like a period after the amends where I was able to just share about how I felt about it. And I told her about this, about how I had always felt like you loved my sister more because she was thin. And my mom was like, oh, she's like, that's not the case. And it was just like, what? Like this whole belief that I believe my whole life was turned on its head. And that's what the child does, right? Like they make things about themselves. And I really like what it says on this handout here where it says body image is in our heads. It is a made up belief about ourselves. So I made that belief up that being thin equals being good equals being loved. However, after that belief was planted, things happened in my life that reinforced that belief. I had this my myopic view where everywhere I looked, I saw reinforcement of that belief. So that belief was reinforced in junior high school. I was overweight, and boys were teasing me. And they were telling me what the message that I heard on a daily basis was, women are only good for one thing. Because you're fat, you're not good for that one thing. So that was the message that was drilled into my head on a daily basis, being tortured in junior high school. So going into junior high school, I was a very gregarious, lighthearted kid. I was overweight. I was a compulsive overeater since I was a little girl, but I didn't really feel like that was like this really heavy weight of shame. But then coming out of junior high school, oh my God, that was fast. Coming out of high school, my spirit was broken. So I had a really hard time connecting with other people and with boys. There's a lot more to tell, so I guess I'll just wrap it up there. But I'll just wrap up by saying that body image for me is cyclical. It comes in waves, and sometimes I feel great at this weight. I feel great. Sometimes at this weight, I don't feel great. So, yeah, it's something that is with me, and I guess it will always be with me because I'm a compulsive overeater, and I just kind of accept that about myself. So, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks. I hate to stop the sharing here, so please continue to share as you go out through the day, and thank you for that. Thank you, everyone, for your participation. Please remember the anonymity clause. Take the stories, but leave the names behind. Keep coming back, abstinent or not. Please complete the evaluation form you were provided. Your comments help us develop workshops for the future conventions. Would all of you who wish, please join me in closing with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.